Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the What is Quality Home Care? An informational webinar. During the presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. Afterwards, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. At that time, if you have a question, you may press 1, followed by the 4 on your telephone. Also, if you'd like to ask a question during the presentation, you may use the chat feature located in the lower left corner of your screen. If you need to reach an operator at any time, you may press *0. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded Monday, September 16, 2013. I would now like to turn the conference over to Sarah Tsuruba. Please go ahead.
Great. Thank you so much, Benjamin. Welcome, everyone. Good afternoon. Thank you so much for joining us here today. We are so glad to have you. As Benjamin said, my name is Sarah Tsuruba, and I am the Associate for Advocacy and Development at the National Consumer Voice for Quality Long-Term Care, which we call the Consumer Voice for short. For those of you who may not know us, we are a nonprofit national organization that advocates for people who receive care and services either at their home, in an assisted living facility, or in a nursing home. The Consumer Voice is the leading national voice that represents consumers in issues related to long-term care. And we really try to help to ensure that consumers are empowered to advocate for themselves. We are a primary source of information and tools for both consumers, family members, caregivers, advocates, and ombudsmen to really help ensure quality of care for the individual. So I'm going to be facilitating this afternoon's webinar on quality home care. And I would just like to again welcome you all today and really thank you for taking the time out of your day to join us and listen. We hope that you find the information informative. I'd like to start today's webinar by giving you all a brief overview of what you can expect to learn during this afternoon's presentation. First, Beverly Laubert, who is the Ohio State Long-Term Care Ombudsman, is going to give a discussion about what quality home care looks like and how individuals can ensure that they receive quality care in their home. After that, we'll hear from Jackie Majoros, who is the Vermont State Long-Term Care Ombudsman. Jackie's going to provide us with action steps that individuals can take if they feel they're not getting quality home care. And then last but definitely not least, we are going to hear from Denise Hope, who is a long-term care consumer, and she receives services within her own home. Denise is going to share with us what quality home care looks like and means to her, as well as the things that she has done to ensure that the care she receives in her home is truly quality. So once we've heard from our speakers this afternoon, we will open it up to you all in the audience for your questions. So we're going to be taking questions both via the phone and also in the chat box in your computer. The ReadyTalk operator will give instructions at that time about how to ask a question over the phone, so be sure to tune in to him once he gives those instructions. And then once we've concluded the question and answer portion, I will conclude the presentation today by giving you guys information about how you can become involved in our organization, the Consumer Voice. So let's kick things off with Beverly Laubert. Beth is the Long-Term Care Ombudsman for the state of Ohio. And Beth, thank you so much for joining us today. Please feel free to begin.
Thank you, Sarah. I'm really glad to be here. We had a similar webinar in Ohio, and I thought it was pretty successful. And so I'm excited to be kind of spreading my wings beyond our own state. Because we think that home, being home wherever you are, is really very important. And I'd like to just say before I get started that a couple of the places that a couple of the references I'm going to make today are from the National Consumer Voice for Quality Long-Term Care's report, Consumer Perspectives on Quality Home Care, that was issued in 2012. So I encourage people to take a look at that report. I believe it's on the Consumer Voice website. It's really very helpful, and so I'm going to be making some references to it today. So when we think about home, it's a place where we feel we belong. It's our domain and a territory ruled by us. And I think that's really important. We talk a lot about person-centered care in nursing homes and assisted living facilities because it's presumed that people aren't feeling at home there, and we want those facility-based long-term care services to really work on making, turning a facility into home for an individual who might need more care and help than they're able to get in their own home. So I think it's a little more obvious when someone's moving to another location to really focus on that. But it's also important when a person's receiving services in their own home that it really is their domain, and everyone that comes into that home recognizes that it's their own, the consumer's territory that they rule. So if a person is needing some personal care to help them remain independent in their home, if they like to sleep late and the staffing agency or the care management agency has the provider come in at 8 a.m. to provide that personal care, then the person who's living in their own house is just as institutionalized as someone who's living in a nursing home who is dependent on the schedule of a staff person. So we think that's really important. So person-centered services are approaches that are designed to assist someone to plan their own life and plan the supports that they receive. They enable people with disabilities or otherwise requiring support to increase their personal self-determination and improve their own independence. Person-centered care practices are aimed at discovering and acting on what is important to a person, asking questions. It's really an important part of getting to know a consumer from a provider perspective to ask a lot of questions. We had a situation today with an individual who has some dementia, has had some, the dementia is related to strokes that he's had, and a situation where he wanted to go to another state. And so the place where he's living wanted him to just move to a nursing home for his own safety. Instead of asking, why did you want to go there? What need do you have that we're not apparently meeting here? And helping him to get those needs met so he can remain independent. So, again, helping them to increase self-determination and discovering what it is that the person wants, what their typical patterns of life are. So again, person-centered services and doing some discovery and inquiry to getting to know a person from a provider perspective it's a process of continual listening and learning, not just a quarterly assessment or an assessment when services begin, but continually asking someone what their needs are in case something has changed, and focusing on what is important to that person right now and what are they thinking about their future and what is important to them. Advanced care planning is something that we want all providers of service to do with an individual. And a little bit later, I'm going to give you some tips on being a contributor to advanced care planning. Person-centered services act on what is important, that is in alliance with the family and friends. So recognizing that the individual is not just a consumer and having the provider focus on that one individual, but realize that the consumer is part of a community and could be, and services could impact interaction with the community, making sure that the consumer has opportunities to continue to engage with family and friends in the way that they wish. So my first reference here on really raising the bar for quality long-term services and supports and person-centered strategies for providing those services and supports It comes from that report that I mentioned earlier. It was a quote from a consumer. My worst day in my home is better than my best day in the nursing home. So consumers really want to stay at home as long as they possibly can. So the things that consumers said when the consumer voice inquired from consumers about what is important to them. One is choices. Being able to choose when, where, and how they receive services. So in order to be a good informant when you're working with a provider of long-term services and supports, I encourage you to keep track of your natural schedule and share that with caregivers. You know, we kind of get into our own habits, but we don't often just sit back and think, okay, what is it I'd like to do? And if my schedule is disrupted, how does that affect me? So just using my own life as an example, something simple. If my husband and I decide to ride to work together, when I'm used to getting up, getting dressed, and heading out the door and picking up what I need on my way out the door, if my husband decides, well, I'm going to ride to work with you this morning, that disrupts my schedule. So I have to kind of think about those things more consciously about what I need to pick up and take, because I'll inevitably forget something because that schedule was disrupted. But it's not something I normally think about because it's become my habit. So keep track of what your natural schedule is and then be able to share that with your caregivers. Something else that consumers found important was being able to remain active in the community. So one of the things that we hear from providers of service is that they have some difficulty. Home-delivered meal seems to be the one that keeps coming up to me. In that a meal, the driver delivers the meal, but the individual was not home. And so there's this issue about whether the provider gets paid for delivering that service when the consumer is not at home. So in order to make sure that your provider understands what your pattern is and where you are, just be sure to make your plans and communicate your plans to the provider so they can adjust their schedule for the services that you need. Another thing that was important to individuals in the report was individualized services, making sure that, you know, one shower, one way of washing someone's hair is not the same as washing someone else's hair. So that everybody has their own particular ways of being, of taking a bath, of washing their hair. They have a particular way. We all have particular ways of how we like our food prepared, and how we like our kitchen to be cleaned and how we like our closet to be organized. So we all know for ourselves what we like and what helps us remain independent the way we have our lives organized. So make a list of the things that are favorites and the things that you don't want to compromise on. So if when you have a caregiver coming in, a homemaker, for example, that they understand when they do your laundry that you want the shirts lined up in one way and the slacks lined up in another way, so that they do that and then you don't have any conflict with the provider. It just makes everyone's life easier, especially yours, because you don't have to worry about that. And then something else that was important to consumers was security. Feeling that their property and themselves are safe. The important thing here is to speak up. If you don't feel safe, if you feel that something's different with your property, something just doesn't feel right, chances are it's not right. So be sure to speak up. Being treated with dignity and respect. Important, again, to say how you want to be addressed, how you want your property to be treated. You don't want someone to just come in and help themselves to a glass of water. say that. You know, they really are a guest in your home, even though they are helping you and providing a service to you. You want to make sure that you are being respected. Training was something that consumers really care about. So provide the recipe, you know, literally and figuratively. Let someone know how you like your food prepared. Let someone know how you like to have your hair washed, what towels you prefer to use, and so on. So provide the recipe for the service that you want. And make sure that they know, the provider knows who is in charge. Give them feedback. If something doesn't feel right to you, again, like I said before, speak up. Provide that feedback so that they can do better. Service planning was another area that consumers wanted to express some value around. Keep your service plan close. Know what your service plan says, what the case manager wrote down after your service planning meeting, and keep it close. So in case there's ever any question on the part of the provider, that you can show that to them. And be prepared if you want to make a change to your service plan. Make some notes, and so when it comes time or any time that you have the opportunity, or just call up your care manager or the provider and say that you want to make a change to your service plan. And so it's important just to be prepared to do that. One person in the report indicated that they have a good system, that they keep a list on their refrigerator of what they want and any changes that they want in their service plan. So anyone who comes into the home knows that's how that communication occurs. And then finally, I think, if you go through all of these things and you're still having some difficulty, it's important to know who your advocates are. So I just provided some websites there for the consumer voice to get these types of services, these types of webinars and opportunities. Sarah does a great job with that. And if you go to LTCOmbudsman.org, which is actually a piece of the Consumer Voice, the National Ombudsman Resource Center, you can find the ombudsman in your own state. And then finally, NDRN is the National Disability Rights Network, and that's the Association of Protection and Advocacy Organizations who advocate for people with disabilities. So I think that's probably a good segue into Jackie's presentation, because Jackie is one of the premier advocates in the country.
Great. It sure is, Beth. Thank you so much. You have really given us some great information today about how someone can go about getting quality care in their homes. So we appreciate the information so much. I would now like to turn things over today and introduce Jackie Medeiros. As Bev said, Jackie is one of the leading advocates in the country, and she's a long-term care ombudsman, the long-term care ombudsman for the state of Vermont. Jackie, please take it away.
Thank you, Sarah, and thanks, Bev. I'd just like to start by giving a very, very brief overview of what we do in Vermont. The ombudsman program in Vermont has been providing services to people receiving home care under Vermont's long-term care Medicaid waiver since 2005. And between 15% and 20% of the cases that we handle involve people who are receiving long-term care services in the community under the waiver. In Vermont, under Vermont's waiver, consumers can receive services from home health agencies, or they can direct and hire their own caregivers. So I just kind of wanted to create that background as I kind of go forward. What I'm going to talk about actually builds a lot on what Bev had talked about already. We kind of have three suggestions for how what you can do if you don't think that you're getting quality care. And fortunately, these three suggestions all begin with the letter C, which makes it easy. It's communicate. You can communicate, care plan, and complain. And as I said, Bev has really touched on some of this already. I'm going to start by talking about communication. I'm sure it's sort of obvious to everybody that communication is really important to getting good care, but I think it's something, it makes sense to stop and talk about it and think about it a little bit more. We found that it's really helpful if people can explain, if consumers can explain who they are to their caregivers, and I think Bev's talked about this a little bit more. Just even not even when you're talking about specific preferences, but just who you are generally. There may be some overarching things about yourself that it's important for your caregiver to know. And if your caregivers know that up front, it might improve the quality of care and it might avoid some problems down the road. For example, you might be someone who really is fairly personal, and private and doesn't really want to talk a lot about their private life, and you might not want to talk to the caregivers about their private life. You know, maybe there may be a way for you to have this conversation early on with your caregivers so they get a sense of who you are, so that you're not always feeling like they're trying to get information from you that you don't want to share, or that you're not having to listen to stories about their life that you don't really want to hear. You know, maybe that family is very, your family is very important to you. You may have a lot of family members who live nearby, and they may be coming out and in and out of your home all the time when the caregivers are there. Sometimes caregivers can find that distracting. You know, they may think that that the family members are there could be doing some of the work that they're doing. I think it's just important to sort of talk about that in advance so they understand what to expect. And, again, it can help avoid problems down the road. So I think a general description of sort of who you are and some bigger issues that are important to you, it's really good to kind of try to have that conversation early on. And, of course, it's always important to talk about your preferences. And it doesn't matter how sort of picky or silly they might seem, you know, they are very important to you, and they really help define, you know, how you're going to define home and what's going to make you feel comfortable. For example, we had a case where the individual had some homemaker services, and the homemaker was doing shopping for her, and the homemaker had the best intentions, and what she was doing is she was buying a half gallon of milk at a time, and the consumer really used about a half gallon of milk a week, but the consumer couldn't pick up, you know, she couldn't really pick up a half gallon of milk. She really needed a quart because the half gallon was way too heavy, and it was very difficult to her for her to raise that issue with the homemaker, because she just felt it seemed too silly, and it made it seem like she was not being very frugal in how she spent her money. But that was something that really mattered to her, and it was something that would have been best if she had addressed it early on instead of, you know, feeling that the caregiver wasn't being responsive to her needs. So that's just, it's very important to sort of talk about your preferences. And again, you know, it may be a preference related to your care. You know, you might need to get out on the right side of your bed and have your walker on your left-hand side, and it's important for that to get communicated to the caregiver. And they don't know that they're doing something wrong or something that's not working for you until you bring it up. And again, you know, it makes sense to bring these things up early on because you don't want things to smolder. You know, you don't want to feel resentful. And when you finally do bring it up, you don't want the caregiver to feel like, you know, oh, my God, I've been doing this wrong for so long. Why didn't you mention it earlier? So communication is, you know, it's really, really basic. But I think it's important. And both in the sense of trying to give the caregivers a broader sense of who you are, and then to talk to them about specifics. The second C is care plan. You can care plan. And I know in Vermont, and it sounds like also in Ohio and other states, there may be some provision to have a service plan. And we think that's incredibly important, you know, but we've sort of tried to take it a step further in Vermont and actually looked at those service plans more like care plans in nursing homes. And I don't know how many of you are familiar with them, but under the nursing home regulations, nursing homes have to have a care plan conference and develop a new care plan following every assessment, and that's quarterly or when needed, when there's been a change in the circumstance. And so we've tried to incorporate that more formal care plan process into the home care arena. So what that means is, you know, people, we're not encouraging people just to have a service plan. We want them to have that same kind of care plan conference. And so that means that you get, bring everyone to the table and you ask for a conference or a care plan meeting or a service plan meeting whenever issues come up that need some specific attention. And prior to that meeting, you know, you define what you think the problems are. You try to identify for yourself what the goal is, how you'd like things to work out in the end. I mean, you basically set the agenda. What we found is on the home care side, agencies were willing to enter into a service plan, but they really weren't that ready to sit down at the table in the individual's home with all the people who need to be there in order to fix the problem. So we were trying to bring that nursing home care plan model into home care, and we found there was a little resistance to that. But over time, we've been able to sort of help the home care agencies understand how important that is and what a critical part it is in providing good care. So you actually could have that care plan meeting or service plan meeting, and it might happen some other places, but it hasn't been happening in Vermont, in your home. You know, if you, you know, for example, there was a situation where the aide, the personal care attendant, was leaving a little bit early every day because they were scheduled to provide care to somebody else, and the scheduler for the agency wasn't allowing enough time for transportation, and it was an issue that was very difficult to resolve. You know, the individual who is getting the care finally said, okay, we need to have a meeting about this. I'm going to be there. My caregiver is going to be there. Would like to have the scheduler from the agency be there. If they can't participate in person, maybe they can participate over the phone. They could identify the problem, talk about the problem, and figure out what the next step was for solving the problem. So that's sort of an example of how you might be able to use a care plan. It may be that you need a piece of durable medical equipment, and if you've been sort of struggling to get it, and there's a dispute as to whether your insurance would pay for it, Medicaid would pay for it, Medicare would pay for it, whether it needs some kind of prior authorization, and it's just been going around and you're not making any progress forward, you know, you can ask for a care plan meeting and get, you know, maybe you need the PT person there, maybe you need the, you know, you need to have perhaps your doctor on the phone participating. You may need someone from your Medicaid agency to be on the phone or someone participating. Your case manager needs to be there and figure out, like, what the problem is, how you want it resolved, what steps you're going to take to resolve it, and who's going to be responsible for carrying out those steps. So we found that having a more formal care plan really does help move things along. And, again, it makes sense to write it down. You know, get everyone at the table, write down your concerns in advance. You set the agenda, and then afterwards, you can make sure that the service plan reflects what was decided at the meeting and that everyone who is has a key role in implementing that service plan understands what their role is. So that's one tool that we've used in Vermont, and it's been a little bit more successful. You know, finally, if you just can't get what you need, you know, you communicate, you know, you've talked to your caregivers, they know generally what kind of person you are and what you sort of are looking for from them. They know your specific preferences. You've had some care plan meetings to try to implement or resolve some of the problems or concerns that you had, and you just can't get anywhere. You know, then you can complain. There's different ways you can complain. You have different avenues. You know, if you're getting services from an agency or any agency, they probably have their own internal grievance process. It's important for you to know what that process is. Even before you are having a problem, you might want to ask them how you could complain, you know, internally or grieve internally if a problem arose. Your case manager might know what that process is. So that's, you know, the first step could always be that internal grievance process. In some states, in some places, and I think it does vary, the agency that provides the service might be regulated by the state. So in Vermont, our home health agencies are regulated through our survey and certification agency, and I think it does vary from state to state. But there are specific regulations that they have to follow in order to maintain their license. So if they don't do what they're supposed to do, then we can file a regulatory complaint with our state licensing agency. And there's probably something comparable. You could do that in your own state. And basically, that regulatory agency would be going in and looking at your complaint to see if, in fact, the home health agency or the other provider violated those regulations. And could they then be cited for failure to do what they were supposed to under the regulations in order to maintain their license? So you can file a regulatory complaint. You know, you may have a complaint about a particular nurse or a particular LNA or a particular therapist who actually licensed to provide those services through your state. And you can provide, file a professional conduct complaint against them, you know. Because they're licensed, they're supposed to meet certain criteria, the individuals, you know, who are providing the service, and you can file a complaint against them. We don't see that often, but we have occasionally had a nurse, or in some cases a doctor, where the consumers really felt that they have done something that was really inconsistent with their responsibilities as a licensed nurse, as a licensed doctor, and we've helped them file a professional conduct complaint. There's also sort of due process appeals. So if you're getting services, you know, you may be getting them through, your Medicaid agency, and it may be that if those services are terminated or reduced, that you have a right to file an appeal. We see a lot of, because we're mostly here in Vermont, we're working with people who are getting services through the state's long-term care Medicaid waiver. We're seeing a lot of people who are, you know, they are getting Medicaid services. So if the hours of their services are reduced or if they're assessed and it's determined that they no longer qualify for those long-term care services, they have a right to file an appeal. So we definitely help people figure out how they can do that. We refer individuals to attorneys who can help them, here attorneys at Legal Aid who can help them file those appeals. So, you know, you do have that sort of due process right. So there's different steps you can take if you really want to complain about the services that you've gotten or the fact that your services have been terminated or reduced, or you want to file a complaint specifically about a licensed professional who you feel is not doing what they're supposed to do under their license. But it's important that you sort of know what your rights are. And one way to sort of find out what your rights are is to, you know, work with the Ombudsman Program. And here, the last slide is talking about building your network. I think it's important, you know, to work with the Ombudsman, to sort of have your family as a part of your network, your friends, your caregivers, and other providers, because they can provide support to you right from the beginning, you know, when you're first trying to sort of define what your relationship is with your caregiver, up through any kind of appeal that you might file if, in fact, you have a complaint. You know, this network, and I think it's important to think about this in advance, like who is in your network and what can you do to help them understand what you need, what services you're getting, why they're important to you, because you may want to draw on those people down the line. Clearly, I mean, the Ombudsman Program and any case manager, they can provide you with some substantive information about what your rights are and about any processes that that you might follow if you want to appeal. But, you know, it's important to have your family, friends, and even some of your caregivers and providers on board, because they can, you know, they can provide informal support to you. You know, if you just want to sit down, like with a caregiver, like a new caregiver, and talk about that issue about the milk. Maybe you want to have another family member there just to provide some support for you. And it'd be good if you knew who that's going to be in advance. You know that you have that person that you can draw on. If you're going to move forward and you feel like you really need to have like a care plan meeting to change your service plan, you may again want a friend or family member there for support. You may want, you know, using the example of the milk, you know, the homemaker might be told by her supervisors, you know, that you need to buy the cheapest milk for the client that, you know, you can find. And if it's like the half gallon one, it's the half gallon. You know, so it may be that that caregiver could actually be helpful at the care plan meeting and could say, well, you know, I've seen, you know, Jackie try to lift that half gallon of milk and she really can't, so I'm going to go ahead and buy the quart and, you know, just want to let you know that, and I'm doing something that may not be consistent with the training, but this is what's working best. So the caregiver can support you. You know, if you're talking about needing some durable medical equipment, you know, you want to have that network to draw on. I mean, if you went forward with either, you know, an appeal, if that you were denied that equipment, I mean, you'd want family and friends to be able to say how they've observed you and they know that you need that new chair, you know, wheelchair, the wheelchair that you're using isn't working. You may have caregivers who could step forward and say that, and you may have definitely other providers, you know, your doctor or your PT who would be able to step forward and say, explain why you needed it. So I think it's important always to be thinking that you should be building that network because you just don't know when you might need their support, and it's sort of better to have them understand who you are, what you need, why home care is important to you, why a particular service is important to you, and so if they know that, they're going to be more able to sort of step in and provide support and assistance when you reach a point where you really might need it. So that's kind of all I have to say right now. Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much, Jackie. I really appreciate it. You have the action steps that individuals can take to really ensure that they get quality home care are very informative. So I appreciate you sharing that information with us today. I would now like to introduce Denise Hoke. Denise lives in Vermont, and she receives long-term services and supports in her home. Denise, would you like to please share with us your experiences?
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much, Sarah. Hi, as Sarah said, my name is Denise Hoke, and I currently live in Brattleboro, Vermont. Now, due to a variety of medical conditions, I do use a wheelchair, and I require the help of a personal assistant to accomplish many of my daily tasks. But before I say anything else, again, I know it's been said before, but I'm really glad that you're here today. While there are different reasons for participating, in the end, I think that working together to create a better place for in our lives and the lives that we care about, the people that we care about, that's what really matters, and I hope I can help that in some way. Well, what I wanted to say first was when I first started out, I was really unsure of what I needed and how I should act. I mean, there were, and there even still are, a lot of different things going on all at once. And on top of all of that, I had to employ someone else to help me better live my life. So, you know, like many people in this situation needing home care, and probably lots of you listening, I had fears and concerns and uncertainties. I wasn't sure how to act, what to say, or even when and how to say it. When it did seem like I should have a voice and should say something, I should criticize or give compliments. Why was this? It was because it was new to me, and needing and having care was definitely new to me, and needing to have care in my home, also something I wasn't used to. In addition to all this, there are new systems that had to be navigated, and what it made it even more challenging with all of these things, that they had to be attended to while I addressed the various things that made it necessary for me to have a personal care worker in the first place. So now, of course, if you require home care, the person who's assisting you has to be able to meet your needs. And since everyone is different, this is not a one-size-fits-all situation by any means. So what I'm saying is your voice really matters. So sometimes it may seem like it's best not to say anything, not to rock the boat, as it were. But in the end, that's not a good idea. It's never a good idea. Because remember, this is about quality care. While a well-trained person is important in this process, it's essential. I also believe the good communication between the people giving and receiving the care is also absolutely essential. As a matter of fact, I would go so far to say is that it makes the difference between acceptable care and quality home health care. And, of course, there's always more than one way to accomplish what you set out to do. However, I found it very helpful to remember that in the end, you teach people how to treat you. In other words, you are the one that sets the rules. You make the guidelines. You're the one in charge. This is your life.
And as a consumer, the person receiving the care, the worker is there to help you. If you expect to receive respect and useful assistance, 9 times out of 10, that's exactly what will happen. Also, as I said before, everybody has different needs and different ways they like and need things done. So please speak up if there's something that needs to be handled differently. And I know it's been said lots of times, but I want to say it again. If there's something helpful or something that needs to be done differently, say so. Be sure to speak up. Say something. It's important. Another phrase I found helpful in keeping the appropriate perspective, and that's for myself as well as the personal assistant or the caregiver, is that everybody needs to remember, I'm a person, not an object. Most people are trained to perform specific tasks. What is foremost at the time is to get the job done then. And unless you really focus on the point above, that you're a person and not an object, you as an individual could get lost in the shuffle. Of course, boundaries are important for both of us, both parties involved. Absolutely important. However, it has to be made clear that it's expected that the human element is never lost. For example, talk to me, not about me. Interact with me one-on-one. And please, remember, I'm a person, you know, with thoughts and feelings just like everyone else. In essence, it is important to emphasize how things are done. It's just as important how they're done as whether or not the task is accomplished. It's important that things get done, but they have to be done in a way that makes you still you. Assisting someone so they can live their life in a more fulfilling way is appreciated, gratifying, and even laudable. But objectifying that someone in the name of getting a job done is dehumanizing, humiliating, and hurtful. So it's really unacceptable. And such an attitude can't be tolerated. If that happens, say something immediately. Please speak up. Now, there are lots of things to think about, but the last thing I want to impart, even emphasize, is that please remember that the worker is in your home, not a hospital or other facility. It's your home. Now, I realize that such a statement may seem too obvious to have to clarify, but it's important to remember and even emphasize it if the need arises. And people can forget that in big and small ways. See, I learned much later than I would have liked that the majority of people who receive the training are taught how to respond when they're working in a hospital or a nursing home. So what they need to remember and what you should remember and remind them is that if an action or anything that they're doing or saying is making you uncomfortable, and it would make them uncomfortable if it was done to them in their home, it's time to rethink how they're behaving toward you. It's time for you to rethink it, and you need to say just that. So I've said these three things, and you may be thinking to yourself, great, but what does that mean? And how can I use it to apply to myself? Some of those things, it makes sense. You can see how communication works, how training would work. But even asking yourself how it works for you is an important question. Because I've had many wonderful experiences with several talented and caring people. But I've also had some frustrating and at times really awful experiences at the hands of those who were supposed to help. There are people who show up late or not at all with little or no advanced warning. Some others only want to watch TV or read a magazine instead of helping me with what I needed to get done. In a few extreme situations, unfortunately, my hair was set on fire, my foot was slammed in a car door, a person, care provider, asked me if she could borrow a substantial amount of money. And it goes on. There are a lot of things that can happen. Now, depending on the situation, I either spoke directly to the individual, I gave them a warning, or I fired them immediately. Because it is my home. It was then, it is now. And it's up to me. And if I can't do it by myself, there have been lots of options that other people have stated. You need to speak up. You need to speak out. And if you can't do it, someone else can. For whatever reason you can't. Now, I believe that all the things that happened to me would have been much less severe or less frequent, especially the bad ones. And they happened to me then because I didn't expect better. So I didn't emphasize those three points to people about communication, to the people who were assisting me, or even to myself. And if I had, I truly believe the negative experiences that I had would have been fewer and much farther apart. So I hope you can learn from my mistakes. And those of you that are just interested can impart this to other people. They really need to speak up. And they need trained people, and what they say, think, and do really matters. And that's all I really wanted to say. Thanks.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Denise, for sharing your experiences with us. I just can't tell you how great it was to hear from the ground level about what, from a consumer's perspective, what it takes, what quality care means to you. So thank you. Thank you. This is very beneficial. So we'd now like to open it up to see if anyone has questions for any of the speakers from today, either Bev, Jackie, or Denise. Benjamin, we are ready for questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to register for a question, please press 1, followed by the 4 on your telephone. You will hear a 3-tone prompt to acknowledge your request. If your question has already been answered and you'd like to withdraw your registration, please press 1, followed by the 3. And ladies and gentlemen, to ask a question, you may do so over the chat feature as well. It's located in the lower left corner of your screen. One moment, please, for our first audio question.
Great. And while Benjamin pulls up the first audio question, I will ask the first question from our chat box. This question is from Gary. He asks, does a nursing home rehab resident have a right to have home care resume when he is ready to be discharged? Can the home care agency decide to refuse to resume care? Are there any federal regs or rights regarding this? Do the doctors prescribe rehab orders to the home care agency remain in effect?
This is Bev. I'll take a stab at that. A lot will depend on whether your state regulates home care and how the services are being paid. If they are publicly funded with Medicare, Medicaid, then you should have a right to appeal the determination if a home care agency does not want to resume services. Probably the best thing in terms of doctor orders is to have a new order written when you're ready to resume home care services, because chances are your needs have changed and the doctor may want to adjust that plan. Based on what, you know, you're hopefully you've gotten some better in the care facility and need to continue progressing. And then also, if it's Medicare covered, for example, there's been this issue with the Medicare, what's considered the Medicare improvement standard, that sometimes services will be denied, like a therapy, because the person's no longer improving. But that's actually a bit of a myth, and you should definitely get in touch with an advocate if you're having some difficulty related to that. So, again, the resuming services, again, if it's publicly funded, there should be appeal rights, but also, depending on your state, I would get in touch with an advocate to help you navigate that if you need it.
Thank you, Beth. Benjamin, do we have anyone over the phones who would like to ask a question?
Our first phone question comes from the line of Sandra. Please proceed with your question.
Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Hi. This is Sandra Olson, and I'm in Denton, Texas. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you, Sandra.
Okay. Do you need me to put it on speakerphone?
Nope, you sound great.
Okay, great. Okay, well, I set up Skype today. I couldn't open your agenda, but I have a whole file here of issues with home care. I totally identify with the lady in Vermont. I came here to do my doctorate in child development. I ended up being diagnosed with Parkinson's, then seizure disorder, had to quit school, and I was given a waiver at first for medicines and doctors, and that was like a hole in the bucket until I went through my COBRA. And then they said, would you like some help in the home? And I said, sure. So that then they gave us a class act. Now, this is through DADS, which is Department of Age and Disability. And it was well run under that umbrella. Now they have, and they've done this several times, they've branched out to HMOs, which are utterly useless. I have 45.5 hours of care in my home. And I have gone through so many, and I'm sure Sarah is probably shaking her head up and down because I've called her. I've gone through so many incidences of abuse that I'm not a, I used to be quiet about it, but now my middle name is You're Fired. They don't train them. They just put hot bodies into houses. So my question...
Hi, Sandra. I'm so sorry. Oh, I'm sorry. Please ask the question. Thank you.
Okay. My question is, and I've called my state representatives and my congressmen, and I was told by my state senator's secretary that policies would have to be changed at the state level for anything to be done, and too bad I just missed it. So my question is, how do we get the people that are coming in off the street, literally, into our homes? They're not, all they are is background checked one time. They're not drug tested. We have the biggest drug addiction in the United States here in Texas. We are 50th in elder abuse and child abuse. In other words, we're the highest. So I joined, I'm a member, and I'm an advocate, So, and I have multiple disorders, but I'm like the lady in Vermont. I would rather have be by myself than be beaten, robbed, heisted, stolen from, had a gun felon working for me. I've gone through all of this. And the way Texas reacts is they call in adult protection, I call the police, then they call in adult protection, then it's filed away. So it's like it's under the cover. So how do we get them bonded? Because when they are bonded, they're responsible. Because I've gone through two washing machines, three dryers, six vacuum cleaners, and not to mention half my house has gotten stolen, not to mention I've gone through emotional and physical abuse. But I'm still here. So until they bond people and the companies, they are going to continue to do the things they do because they just do like the lady says. They just think that, I mean, I've even been a CDS employer, and I hired two criminals. They just interchanged their Social Security. I was starved and I was stalked. So until they're bonded and held accountable, until they monitor them, until they supervise them, it's just going to keep going on. And I'm speaking not just for me. I am speaking for those that cannot speak. I mean, they have people who have dementia and Alzheimer's who have been so thoroughly abused in this state. I could give you the statistics and mail it in to you later. But because God has left me marbles, I have a friend in Louisiana, and Louisiana is worse, but she has been abused every single week. She has knots on her head every day from falling. So it's like, what can I do? And if you can't sue them because they'll blacklist you. Bush made sure of that.
Sandra, thank you. Thank you for your question.
Yeah. I've gone through so much.
No, that's okay.
It's just
I'm trying
to go forward and see what can we do. We're into like our 20th
right.
agency now.
I know. It's incredible. So,
yeah.
Bev, Becky, maybe Denise, does anyone have any comments for Sandra?
Well, this is Jackie. I think it sounds, Sandra, like a really incredibly difficult situation. And without knowing exactly how things are work in Texas or how it's structured, it's hard really to talk about anything specific. But I just think that the concerns that you raised are probably shared by people all around the country to some extent, you know.
Sure.
And I know one of the things that we're trying to work on in Vermont is some sort of comprehensive training program for direct care workers where there'd be some minimum requirements of training and there'd be some requirement that the agencies are monitored so that they meet those training requirements. But I think it's really tough. So I think training's a really important issue. I just think the whole issue about abuse, neglect, and exploitation is really a difficult one because I know there are some states where the Adult Protective Services Unit might not have the resources or to actually do the investigations and provide the protections that people need. So I think you've just touched upon some areas that, you know, may be extreme in your state, but I think people around the country can identify with some of the problems that you've spoken about.
Well, I'm fixing to go on the media with it and call names and agencies that are still on the list. They are still on the dad's list. And it's incredible that if I do that, if I become the deep throat for the seniors, and go media-wise and go and start writing at the newspaper, which is what I'm thinking of doing, I won't get any help at all. But it doesn't matter. I don't really care anymore because I am tired of getting abused. I'm tired of it. And I know if I'm tired of it, and I still have a very strong will to live. And if I'm tired of it, I know that there are people that are out there who, and I don't have any family that supports me. I don't have a support network. I don't have a network at all. I have a friend who I call my spiritual daughter who comes once a week. I have two neighbors that every now and who are students who every now and then come in and check on me. But that's it. So what I'm trying to say is that, yeah, I'm sorry.
Oh, that's okay. I appreciate your comment so much, and I thank you for sharing with us what you've been experiencing. Unfortunately, we do have quite a few other individuals who've asked.
I know, so, but until, can I say this? Until they get bonded, we are going to continue to go through this. Until they bond agencies and make them responsible for their clientele. Because there is no care plan. I've never had a care plan in my life. Until they bond the people, we will not have quality care.
Well, thank you very much for your comment, Sandra. We really appreciate it.
No problem.
Great. So moving forward, let's take another question from the chat box. This question is from Nathan. He asks, do you believe placing regulations on caregivers helps the consumer? Do you understand that this causes recruiting and retention issues? Most important elements is compatibility between the consumer and the caregiver. Elderly and DDD care is not the same as high-functioning persons with physical disabilities. Jackie, Bev, or Denise, would any of you like to comment on this?
This is Bev. It is a fine balance, a fine line that we walk to make sure that regulation aimed at quality improvement doesn't impact access negatively. It is a challenge and certainly one that I think, at least I understand, I think as ombudsmen generally we understand that. And it's actually, you know, I tell our new ombudsman in Ohio that it's actually nice not being a regulator because we have more opportunities to help resolve a problem without regulation, bringing in the regulatory agency and then knowing that the regulations are there as a backup is important. So I think that, at least in Ohio, we try to get a good mix of having an ombudsman available to help resolve a problem and then having the regulations kind of in our back pocket and the regulatory agency as a backup in case we're not able to resolve a problem. It seems to be a good mix. In Ohio, however, we do not license home care agencies, so we really have to rely on our powers of persuasion as ombudsmen and our problem-solving skills. Of course, for publicly paid services such as Medicare and Medicaid, there are some regulatory guidelines that the providers have to follow. But, yes, certainly I understand the fine balance between regulating and creating an access problem.
So this is Jackie, if I could comment for a minute. I understand Nathan's concerns, and I really appreciate that sort of the regulations can create some access issues. I do think it's what we need to keep in mind is direct care workers were regulated, or home health agencies are regulated, that you really have to be sure that those regulations include the consumer's perspective and that they reflect the rights of the consumers to autonomy and to make choices. And I think, unfortunately, what happens now is some of the regulations that are in place don't really reflect that. So I think you could have regulation, even though it is a fine balance, I think you could have regulations, and at the same time, you could protect people while ensuring access and protecting their autonomy.
Excellent. Thank you both. I really appreciate it. Benjamin, is anyone queued up for a live question?
Our next phone question comes from the line of Jim. Please proceed with your question.
Thank you for a very instructive program today. This is Professor Jim O'Reilly, the University of Cincinnati. And as I'm researching this area, I'm finding it difficult to determine what is the gray area, if you will. Specific question, when there's a long delay in Medicaid appeals, what does the person at home do if they've had a falling out or a difficulty with their agency? Should they hire another agency? Should they seek some support? What should they do? It's sort of an informal matter, I guess. If the agency isn't satisfied with you, believes you complain too much, et cetera, how should an individual at home do this appeal without waiting for months and months? Thank you.
This is Jackie. I'm not sure I quite understood the question. When you say to appeal, you're talking about appealing a refusal of the agency to provide service or the person's Medicaid eligibility? And I'm sorry, and if Bev or somebody else understands the question better, go ahead and answer, but I was just a little confused.
It's a denial of service. If you believe the agency is not giving you the service that you expected, and your alternatives are to appeal under the Medicaid system in that state, is it best to go and hire another agency or seek to hire another agency or to wait for the appeal outcome?
Well, in Vermont, I mean, if you are receiving the service and then the agency terminates you or decides that you're no longer eligible for service, if you appeal within a certain amount of time, you will get continuing benefits pending the appeal. If it's an initial eligibility determination, then I think it is a little bit more difficult because there are some services that Medicaid will go back and cover retroactively, but there are some services that they won't cover retroactively. And so then the individual might have to pay for services themselves. I don't know if anybody else, Bev, if you have any thoughts about that or how it works in Ohio.
Actually, the way you described it is the way I would describe it as well.
Great. Thank you both so much. Our next question coming from the online chat is from Mitzi. She is asking, is there a national point of information, such as Nursing Home Compare, that consumers can access and find out information about care providers, such as CILs, CDDOs, home health, home care agencies, and that includes information about rankings on performance or quality and survey or quality and survey inspection or provider review?
I don't know the answer to that.
There's a home health compare, similar to Nursing Home Compare. But because Medicare is really the only federal Medicare home certified home health agencies are the only providers that we're talking about here in home care that are federally regulated, then it becomes an issue for individual states. And like I had said, in Ohio, for example, we're one of very few, if maybe the only state that does not license home care agencies. So it has been a challenge for us to get that kind of quality information similar to the quality information that we have about facility-based providers of long-term services and supports. And we have a website in Ohio that includes information similar to Nursing Home Compare, but adds satisfaction data and so on. We do satisfaction surveys. But it's more difficult in home and community-based care because it's not really an even playing field.
Great. Thank you so much, Bev. Benjamin, is anyone else queued up for a live question?
Our next question comes from the line of Joe. Please proceed with your question.
Hello. This is a very informative program. As an ombudsman in California, I find that the generation of elders that need home care and who are in facilities generally – excuse me?
Yep, Joe, we can hear you.
Hello?
Hello?
Okay. Mm-hmm. And I generally find that the generation of elders is, they look at the caregiver as sort of the boss, the authority figure. They don't want to complain. And unless I really dig it out of them, oh, I have a problem eating at 5 o'clock. So I need to talk to the caregiver and try to, you know, resolve the issue. But these people, they don't want to, you're telling us in the previous slides to get the people to speak out. But it's very difficult when they look at the authority figure as the boss in the generation that they come from, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. It's sort of a comment and a question, because I think you have to be more involved with the person as an ombudsman. But
yeah,
a lot of times the resident won't speak out.
Right, I agree with you, and that's one of the reasons that I think in my program that we have greater presence in facility-based long-term care, because it's easy. You know, we can walk into a long-term care facility and talk to anyone who lives there and anyone who works there, but it's more challenging to get that kind of access to people who are living in their own home and relying on caregivers and care managers to provide information to consumers about the ombudsman program so they can initiate that contact. And I really think that, I mean, from an advocacy standpoint, that's something we need to address is, you know, we can walk into a nursing home and see everyone who lives there. Why can't we get from a care management or, you know, the Medicaid agency or whoever manages these services information about the consumers that they serve so that we can reach out to them? It's definitely a gap, I believe, in terms of being able to have consumers have access to their advocates. In Ohio, we're about to launch an outreach effort to in a multi-pronged outreach effort and investing some funds into doing some public service announcements and different methods. So I would love to have feedback from consumers about how we can best get to consumers and let consumers know about us.
Excellent.
So this is Jackie in Vermont. You know, I agree with Bev. It's much easier to sort of reach out to consumers on the nursing home, residential care home side than it is on the home care side. In Vermont, we get most of the referrals, or a large number of the referrals we get are from the case managers, because everyone who's receiving home care through our Medicaid waiver program has to have a case manager. So they often contact us when they come across a problem that they just can't resolve. Often when we've helped someone who's been referred to us by a case manager, then they might contact us individually if they have a problem down the road. Everyone who gets long-term care Medicaid services in the community through the Medicaid waiver program is given a brochure when they're enrolled in the program. If they're denied services or their services are terminated, they're given our contact information. But nonetheless, I mean, I just know that we're not reaching out to all of the consumers who are having problems, and I absolutely agree with Bev that it really would be great to sort of figure out how we can do that. I do want to say that when we do get a specific problem, it's sort of going to that whole issue about people not wanting to speak up. You know, we may get a problem. A case manager might contact us because a resident, a consumer is having problems getting, say, a piece of durable medical equipment, and they contact us, and we go out and talk with the consumer, make sure that they want us to help them with the issue. And then they may have a very other problem that they don't want to talk about that has more to do with their everyday life. It may be that they're not getting their, you know, bath when they want, or they're, you know, getting put to bed at like 7 o'clock at night, and those issues just, you know, might not ever come up if we hadn't first been involved by the case manager on some other issue. So I think it is difficult. I think you raise a good point.
Excellent. Thank you both, Jackie and Bev, for your comments. It looks like we have time for a couple more questions. So our next question from the chat is from Eileen. She asks, is there a separate ombudsman state law in Ohio which expands the long-term care ombudsman program to home care, like in Vermont? Can both speakers share if there are separate ombudsmen assigned for home care, or is the same ombudsman which also spends their time in nursing homes and assisted living?
Well, in Vermont, when the waiver program began in 2005, the legislature said that they wanted the people who are getting services in the community to have the same access to sort of ombudsman services and independent advocate as people in facilities. So they essentially said that the state had to fund two full-time ombudsmen to provide services to people getting home care. You know, Vermont's a pretty small state, so we have only five ombudsmen that cover the whole state, and we decided that it didn't make any sense to try to divide up the state, you know, between home care and facility-based services just because it wasn't that efficient. So we cross-train all of the ombudsmen in the state, and they're providing services both to people in facilities and people getting home care services, and they spend about little over, 20% of their time, a little bit more than that, providing services to people in the community, and then the rest of the time they provide services to people in facilities. But we found that the work that people do on the facility, on the home and community-based side, actually those cases take a lot more time just because you're talking with people individually. You're not out in a facility dealing with, you know, four or five people at once. And, you know, you have to deal with a bunch of different agencies that are spread out. It's not like in a nursing home where everyone's together. So that's kind of what we do in Vermont. We're cross-trained and provide services around the state.
Great. Thank you. Beth, can you speak to whether there is a separate ombudsman state law in Ohio which expands the ombudsman program?
Since our enabling law passed in Ohio in 1989, ombudsman programs have had the same scope of authority in all areas of long-term services and supports. And the home care definition in our law is basically anything that helps a person remain independent in the community. So, for example, we want to handle a complaint about public housing. A gentleman had left something on the stove too long, and they removed his stove and oven from his apartment, which interfered with his ability to cook for himself. So we even assisted with that. So our authority in Ohio is quite broad.
Great. Thank you both very much. Benjamin, is there anyone else queued up for a live question, and this will probably be our last question for this afternoon?
Our last question in queue is a follow-up question from Sandra. Please proceed with your question.
Yes. Can you come down to Texas? we cannot, they have a no, I don't know how do you say it, a no, I don't know what the word is. You can complain, and there's supposed to be a
retaliation?
That's it. That's the word. Now you know I'm Parkinsonian. There's a no retaliation. That's supposed to be, okay? I have called in and complained because I have taken care of three people in my family who are in nursing homes, and they all died. And last year, my dad died in a nursing home. So I remember my mother-in-law used to tell me horror stories, and I used to say, Mom, just call the 1-800 number. She says, no, they'll hurt me. And I didn't understand that until I became homebound. And that if you call and complain about an agency, the agency will call adult protection on you. And so adult protection comes in and they say, hi, how are you doing? You doing okay? Fine. Okay, bye. And they leave. Nothing gets done.
Sandra, that is really good input. I mean, the consumer voice is all about advocacy. And so I'm sure that, you know, Sarah is hearing all of this and writing it down furiously. It's really good.
They have an advocacy center. They have an advocacy center here.
Unfortunately,
but they
Sandra,
don't.
We are running out of time today. So do you have one final question to ask? Because I'm sure the speakers would be happy to answer.
Can you come down to Texas? Because the advocacy center here is only for people if they're if it's job related. If you have a disorder and you're being discriminated against and you on a job, you're not even helped if you're handicapped for other things through another agency here. You have to be working. So they work you till you're dead here, but I can't work anymore. And I have no advocacy. They have area on agency. It's a total flop. All they just do is play ring around the rosy with you. You call the Consumer Dads hotline. They just file it. Nothing gets done. Nothing. That's why I will fax you all of my questions. But I was chatting, and we have the right here to just pick another agency. But it's the same thing over and over and over and over and over and over. It's like we're going to another agency. So it's like there is no training for the people here. I train all my attendants on everything. My illnesses, how to do my house, because there is no training. And there's no if you're a CDS employee, there's no backup. There's no advocacy. So once they close that door, they can do anything to you. And nobody believes you. So we need your presence in Texas. I told Paula Swinson that I was going to be doing this today, and she asked me, and she's with Dads, and she said, is that a threat? I said, no, it's not a threat. It's a fact.
Well, Sandra, I would be happy to speak more about this one-on-one offline. So how about we do that later? Okay, perfect.
Because
thank
we
you.
Need somebody down here. We really
Great.
Do. People are getting hurt.
Yeah, I completely understand. And I appreciate you coming on here today and sharing your experiences with us. So thank you.
And
so
I'm sure that there are other people in the United States that are also being hurt.
Absolutely.
But thank
Absolutely.
You very much for your letting me speak.
Our pleasure. So it looks like we are going to be wrapping things up today. I just want to thank everyone for coming on here and asking your questions and for sharing your comments with us. We really appreciate it. And I especially want to thank Bev, Jackie, and Denise for the great information that they gave today and for just really lending us their expertise and knowledge. So thanks, the three of you especially. So before we leave, I just wanted to briefly tell you about a few additional opportunities for you all to get involved with the Consumer Voice. As some of you may know, we have actually recently formed two focus groups. One focus group is for home care consumers, and then the other focus group is for family members. Basically, the thought process behind forming these focus groups is that it's really important to us at the Consumer Voice that we hear what consumers of long-term care are experiencing at the ground level and also what they think. Therefore, individuals who receive long-term services and supports in their home, as well as family members, are really in the perfect position to share with us what consumers are experiencing. So in turn, we take those opinions and feedback, and they really help us present the consumer perspective to policy members, policy makers, as well as think through, you know, really what our positions should be on policy matters, and also determine what policy changes are really needed to make care and services better. So to accomplish all of that, we have formed these two focus groups. So if you out there listening in on this call today are either a consumer who receives long-term services and supports in your home, or if you are a family member of someone who also receives long-term services and supports, and if you would like to be a part of either of these focus groups, please let me know. We would love to have you. You could email me at scirba@theconsumervoice.org or give us a call at 202-332-2275. And I've also put up here on the webinar screen our contact information. So feel free to email the general general email address and the phone call, and I would be happy to place you on our focus group list. In addition to the focus groups, we would also like to invite those of you with email this afternoon to join the Consumer Voice Action Network. If you're not familiar with the Action Network, it is truly a really great way to get information and keep up to date about the latest long-term care news and national and state policy developments, and also get ways for opportunities for you to personally take action. For example, you could send a member to your congressperson. We truly make it very easy for you to take action by giving you the tools that you can use. To join the Action Network, all you have to do is go to the Consumer Voices website, which is right on your screen right now. If you go to the main page, just scroll to the bottom of that screen and click on the green button to the left-hand side of the page, which says Sign Up for the Consumer Voice Action Network. So once you click on that green box, it will take you to the page where you can just fill out your information and sign up for the Action Network. I promise not only is it very easy to sign up, it's also extremely easy to take action. And it's so incredibly important. Legislators truly pay attention to the messages they get, in particular when they're from their own constituents. So the more of us that take action, the better chances we have of getting improvements and changes that really make life better for people receiving services in their homes. So in closing this afternoon, I just want to give all of you a big thank you again for taking your time today to view our presentation. Again, we hope that it was informative and beneficial. And we hope you join us for our next webinar down the road. So this will conclude our call. Thank you again for your time. Goodbye, and have a great day.
Ladies and gentlemen, this does conclude the conference call for today. We thank you for your participation and ask that you please disconnect your lines.